Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. We just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me. Need a little help, y'all. Yes, I do. Need a little help. Say it, boy.
Need some help, y'all.
Change the world. What it used to be.
Can't do it alone.
Do it alone. Need some help, yeah. Need some help, yeah.
Need some help. That's right. MPH Radio needs some help. Need some help to wake up everybody. Wake them up, wake them up, wake them up. Today we're going to wake you up in reference to our theme today, which is March 18, 2023. The theme is wealth, war, and wages. The three W's. This is the MPH three W's. Wealth, war, and wages. We're going to talk about these concepts, their relationship, and hope to give you a better understanding of not only the relationships, but how we can change that dynamic. Before we go any further, like always, we have a special little addition today on this program. We're going to take you live to Washington, D.C., as they have an anti-war protest and demonstration at Lafayette Park, right across from the White House. We have with us our reporter, Brother Moses, Robert Moses. He'll be bringing people in and out of the program, speaking to what's going on at the so-called anti-war demonstration. Let me just talk a little bit about this anti-war demonstration, give you a backdrop. It's under the banner of the United National Anti-War Coalition, UAC. It's on Saturday, March 18, National March on Washington. The rally will start at 1 p.m. Lafayette Park, across from the White House, on the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. We say no war in Ukraine, no war to NATO, no weapons, no money for the Ukraine war. Okay, that's the nature of the protest, and some of the things they are demanding and asking for is, and just bear with me, I read the communication that came from this coalition, was organized this event today. It said a demonstration will make connections between the human and financial toll of U.S. militarism at home and abroad. Key demands include peace in Ukraine, no weapons, no money for a Ukraine war. Abolish NATO and U.S. militarism and sanctions. Fund people needs, not the war machine. No war with China and USA to racist apartheid Israel. Fight racism and bigotry at home. U.S. hands off Haiti and AFRICOM and sanctions on Syria. Those are just some of the demands that this war will speak to. And we'd like to also give you an opportunity to speak to us as well by joining us and dialing in. You can dial in, the number is, and I got a little, the phone number is to call in for today's program, 818-337-0016, 818-337-0016. So like always, I get started with this party by first and foremost giving you something to think about as it relates to this concept of freedom. Then we're going to follow with some Black Minifacts by Susan MPH. Then we're going to bring in Brother Moses for a little while. He's going to interview some people at the park, followed by we will have a poem from our sister, beloved Sister Murray, Minister Sister Murray. And then we'll have discussion on the theme, wealth, war, and wages. And, of course, we'll close out with a statement to the community from our brother Alex. That's the order for the day. So at this point in time, what I just want you to think about as you continue to work through this day, when we talk about freedom, we're going to give you a general definition, tell them how it fits into your schemes of things in your life, is that when we look at things today and we argue about this question of freedom, one of the general concepts of freedom we often use is freedom. Freedom is having the ability and the means to control those necessities for life. We have a good article dealing with some wealthy billionaires that we're going to talk about in the context of our theme today, wealth, war, and wages. Again, just think about this concept of freedom. It's having the ability and means to control those necessities for life. What do you think about that? Think about that. At this point in time, we're going to make a quick transition to Susan. She's going to share some Black Minifacts for this week, the 14th through the 18th. The dates of some of the events, significant events took place in our history, in our world, and we're going to now turn this mic over to Susie as she comes to you and share with you some of the Black Minifacts for this program. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening. Hi, I'll give you a few Minifacts for March the 14th through the 17th. And the first one is that Fannie Lou Hamer, she died in 1977. And that was on the 14th of March. Then also on the 15th, by this day, we had more than 50,000 Africans murdered in a few weeks while revolting in North Angola in 1961. On the 16th, the Freedom's Journal, first African newspaper in the USA, was published in 1827. And last and final Minifact for this week, Nat King Cole, American African singer and pianist, was born in 1919. I've just given you a few facts, and it comes from the calendar of the IRS, the PRSP of 2021. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve, for that many facts. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to give you a music, play some music with a message. So when we come back, we're going to come back with our report today. Brother Moses, he's up in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk to him a little bit about what the climate is like right now. And then we're going to hope that he'll have lined up one or two individuals. We would like to talk to him about the so-called anti-demonstration against war. And again, we welcome you to chime in on this discussion. But to do all this, we'll take our station break, music with a message, and when we come back, we will have Brother Moses and some people live up in Lafayette Park in Washington, D.C. We say war no more, war no more. This is the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. We'll be right back. This is MPH Radio.
Thank you.
Got us living on the front line. Welcome back to MPH Radio. MPH Radio is a bi-weekly program that comes on every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. It's a program and activity under the banner of Missing Pages of History, Inc. We ask our friends and supporters now. We may have a means where you want to, if you want to support us, you can make your contribution to Zali, and you send it to Missing Pages of History 1 at yahoo.com or spell together lowercase. Again, you can support the radio station, the activities of Missing Pages of History by Zealous. You can zealousize us by sending it to Missing Pages of History 1 at yahoo.com. At this point in time, we're going to go into the heart of our program as our theme is on wealth, war, and wages. Today in Washington, D.C., right across from the White House, under the banner of the United National Anti-War Coalition, UAC, they're hosting the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. We said no war in Ukraine, no to NATO, no weapons, no money for Ukraine war. And we have with us today live Brother Robert Moses, MPH reporter. We're going to bring Brother Moses in right now and talk to him a little bit about the atmosphere at the park, at the rally, and maybe speak to a couple of individuals who are up there. So right now, let's see if we can bring Brother Moses in. Brother Moses, welcome to MPH Radio.
Thank you, Brother Lee. This is Robert here in the Lafayette Park. The usual suspects are here, Lucy Murphy, Medea Benjamin, Eugene Perrier, Brian Becker, and there's about, I would say, maybe 300 people here. Considering there were 200 sponsors, it's a small turnout, but the people are on point and united around the issues. And I have with him my brother, Daryl Monjenkins, who's here, and he'd like to talk about why he's here. Hold on a second.
Well, it's kind of funny because, I mean, I believe that we need to do something about the military-industrial complex, and we also need to do something about all our interventions in various wars across the country. But I am concerned because there are some folks on the other side that might want to exploit any efforts that we make for their personal gain. And I wanted to be here to make sure that they were identified and basically ostracized from this crowd or any other crowd that's where we are present, so to speak, because I think that we need to diminish their ability to function, and we most certainly cannot be a part of that ability. So.
Brother Daryl.
Hello?
Brother Daryl. Yes, can you hear me, Brother Moses? Is Brother Daryl still there? Put him back on the phone.
He can't hear me right now. Hold on a
Brother
second.
Brother Daryl, can
phone.
You hear me?
Let me get him the phone. Hold on. I'm using my call. Hello?
Yes,
hello?
Brother Daryl, welcome to MPH Radio. Welcome to MPH Radio. We have a question
hey,
for you as a participant.
You're breaking up on me right now, bro. I can't hear.
Okay, I'm breaking up on you?
No, I got you. I hear you now.
Yeah, I was just not for you to speak to our audience in terms of U.S. policy, war policy. What are three of the major contradictions of the U.S. war policy and why the people should be opposed to it?
Why should we be opposed to it? I mean, all we got to do is look around and see what the United States and what Europe, by extension, has done to the globe in the name of imperialism. I mean, they always talk about, for example, the sun never sets on the British Empire. Well, now America's like that. And wherever America goes, the people seem to die there. And we need to make sure that we have control of our own futures, our own destinies, and that is going to make all the difference in the world when the time comes.
Now, what you said to the rich and the wealthy, seeing that the rich and the wealthy have a tendency to support walls, that's why walls are fought. What is your message to the rich and the wealthy?
What should happen to the rich and wealthy? Make them
poor.
What's
your message to them?
What should happen with them?
What is your message to them? What would you say to the rich and the wealthy?
I would say to the rich and wealthy, sleep lightly, because the bottom line is you are not going to exploit us anymore either. I mean, in the end, you got to remember that while we're talking about these governments across the country, these governments are being fueled by something. That rich and powerful are that something. So if we do not handle that, if we do not handle the oligarchs in this society, then we're basically fighting with one hand tied behind our back. We have got to do it all.
Okay, Brother Darryl, we thank you very much for your time, and continue to raise hell. We thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are with Brother Robert Moses live out in the park, Lafayette Park, at the demonstration, the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Brother Moses, do you have anybody else available there that would like to speak to right now?
Would you like to say something about why you are here for this invasion of history radio show?
Because I am completely sick of war, 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 war. And it's about time for peace, diplomacy, if they understand that word. And I'm going to go to any anti-war rally I can. Something has to be done.
All right.
Moses, find us one more person, and then we'll come back to you later. See if you find someone else who'd like to make a statement. Why they're there.
Maybe see if I can find someone else. One of us was very naive back in a dozen years ago. So, excuse me. Did I get you to tell the radio show why you're here?
I'm a member of a group called Listen to Peace. We are here to say stop all the wars, especially the war in Ukraine. We need to negotiate. We don't want to see people killed or injured or their countries destroyed. So we are coming together with other groups to speak out against that. We also commemorate or acknowledge the 20th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, which is also a wrong thing to do. So we need to stop spending money on getting people killed and injured. We need to take care of our disabled veterans who are having problems today getting health care in a timely manner. And we just need to turn this country around.
I just call you. Thank you for your comment. At this point in time, we would have fought a brother, Robert Moses. We'll come back to him later. He's at the anti-war demonstration up in Washington, D.C. at Lafayette Park, right across from the White House. They are protesting and also highlighting the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. We said no war in Ukraine, no to NATO, no weapons, no money for Ukraine war. Brother Moses, we'll come back to you later. And right now, we'll go back into our live studio with our participants today. And right now, what we're going to do right now, we're going to talk a little bit about our theme, wealth, war, and wages. Yes, we're talking about the three W's, wealth, war, and wages. That was an interesting article. I think it was written out of Bloomberg magazine a couple years back, but his article is very timely. It talks about the relationship of wealthy individuals such as Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos. Most of the time, this article emphasizes on Bill Gates. But we're not talking about Bill Gates, the individual. We're talking about Bill Gates, who symbolizes and who represents the wealth, the wealthy. And in this article is some real serious contradictions and relationships that we need to have a discussion and get a better understanding of as it relates to these three W's, wealth, war, and wages. One of the issues raised was this question of the role of billionaires. Should we have billionaires in our society, and what kind of influence do they weigh? And many times it's wealthy people like that, they can start walls based upon their own self-interest. Not only can they start walls, but also they can influence policies. They can influence institutions. They can dictate and create conditions where the workers are forced to have low wages or no wages. This whole question of war, you know, when we think about war, basically two entities go into war, or two entities engage in war. Normally you have governments against governments, or corporations create walls to fight for their interests. But they are never the people war. Such as we're talking about the 20-year anniversary of this whole question of dealing with this invasion of Iraq. The whole war was based upon weapons of mass destruction, which we all knew and found out later on they were all lies. So right now, we can go to some of our members and you, the listening audience. We'd like to hear your perspectives. Talk about the relationships of the very three W's, wealth, war, and wages. So we'll come in with Brother Alex. And Brother Alex, in terms of the article, I just gave you a little quick summation in terms of one, two points of views that came out of this article that I thought were very significant. One of the issues was that, you know, whether or not any society should have billionaires. And number two, the way they can sway policies and dictate things in a country where, you know, when you talk about this question of democracy, it seems that money rules over votes. So in terms of these three relationships, Brother Alex, wealth, war, and wages, you say what?
Well, again, I appreciate Mr. Lee for you giving me an opportunity to even voice an opinion today. Because when you're talking about a subject that a lot of people don't want to talk about, because first of all, when we're dealing with wealth, that is beyond my imagination of how a person would want hundreds of billions of dollars. And then on one hand say that $6 billion is not enough money to live on. That's beyond my comprehension of an individual that only sees greed in his livelihood. When I look at war and what causes war and why people go to war and the lives of war and the lives that are changed by war and the lives that are given because of war, the casualties are not only death, but the casualties are homeless, the poor. Educational opportunities are destroyed. Hospital centers, the infrastructure of a country is taken away. And then if we can get back to the other thing you were talking about, the wages, which is so detrimental in all these large companies who amass great wealth but do not want to pay the wages to the workers who work long hours, hard hours, without union representation, without any representation almost, as things are decided for them and how much they should live on, goes back to the same question that one gentleman says he can't live on $6 billion. When you have households that live on less than $6,000 a year, when we look at the poverty level, compare it to what the investment level of the multi-millionaires and multi-billionaires. It is such a far cry from one end of the spectrum to the other. Yes, Mr. Gates and many others have been involved in so many different things, have their hands in so many situations. And it's all about money and raising money and carrying on more war. Because in war, there's profit. You know, you don't build 100 tanks. You don't build 1,000 tanks. You don't build hundreds of thousands of tanks not to use them. You don't spend billions of dollars in ammunition that will never be fired or ships that will never sail. We have just went crazy in our own budget to spend over $700 billion for a war that may never happen. But yet when you ask the country to submit billions of dollars to education and health care, then everyone has an uproar because you're trying to protect or help someone that truly need help. We have our priorities, just like Mr. Gates here. We have our priorities in the wrong area. And though we think that by giving a few billion dollars here and there, as in charities that we're helping out, that is not the basis of what man should be doing with his brother. So as I looked and read about all the billions of dollars in this report and how Bernie Sanders and Ms. Warren came across and said billionaires should be paying their fair share, and they gave about every excuse that they could come up with if you read and see deeper. The rich in this country, the wealthy in this country, do not want to pay their fair share. And I'm not saying that all of them, but I'm saying quite a few. And they know who they are. So that is their own judgment and how their own legacy will be told. But this is a great article, and I wish other people will have a chance to read it. And I'm waiting on the other responses here today because it just puzzles me again how the rich did not feel rightly to share that wealth with others. I just don't understand it. And I turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Alex. You know, one of the things we may want to touch on, too, in terms of this misnomer of how they give to society and talk about charity. One of the things the article brought out, and I would like for people to speak to, is how do you give money to charity, but at the same time, when you give money to charity, you get more back and become more wealthier? Who made those rules that allowed the wealth to make wealth in that form? So we'd like to just talk about that. That's a heck of a structure where you can create a society where you can give, and you give back 3 times, 4 times, 10 times more. Next, we'll go to Sister Susie. In terms of the argument, Sister Susie, what are some of the points of view that you would like to share with our listening audience about the social question between wealth, war, and wages? Susie, the mic is yours.
The main thing I was thinking about, when you look at an organization as powerful as the World Health Organization, we need to find out the individuals that's working and that's allowing these billionaires to come in and make the decisions as far as people suffering and stuff like that, because if we could find out who they are and basically try to work against this organization, because one organization shouldn't have the power that the World Health Organization has. I know it's the world and it's a lot of people, but you take people like, and you have the Gates Foundation where the staff gives him total veto power over decisions. It's these kind of organizations and individuals that we need to find out who they are and basically target them so some way that we could basically maybe change their mind because of the fact people are suffering. And one example, and even with the charter schools, why should we allow them to approve a charter school for their history? when we got black, brown, and all kinds of history out there, but we allowing their billionaires to do it. It's a corrosive effect on democracy and society. They are, in other words, what you call a menace to society. So we have to start by going after these organizations that are giving these billionaires the power.
First point, Sister Susan, thank you. Let's go to our caller. Caller, I'm going to bring you in at 6057. Caller. Will you speak to this question of the relationship between wealth, wall, and wages, and maybe what you took from this article? Caller 6057, welcome to MPH Radio.
Yes. The wealthy do philanthropy not out of the goodness of their heart, but they have an ulterior motive, and that is to buy influence. And that's one of the takeaways I have from this article. And it reminds me of an observation Malcolm X made many years ago, that to be a capitalist, you have to be a bloodsucker. And what that means is the fact that capitalists or billionaires in this case suck the blood out of the masses of the working people. And the reason why there's so much poverty in the world is because of the existence of a handful of billionaires compared to the rest of the population. I think one of the takeaways from an article, the article pointed out that that $30 billion could solve the problem of hunger in the world. And you have a few thousand billionaires, you know, that could finance that problem, that have the resource to resolve that problem the world over. But it's because of capitalism and all other manifestations of capitalism, such as imperialism and racism, that allows this sort of situation to exist. And it is only the workers organized in a critical manner that can put an end to it, because capitalists or billionaires function by infringing upon other people's rights to develop to their fullest human potential. When philanthropists contribute to charity, they're merely buying influence, and they use their wealth in order to exert control over the policy and direction of these organizations, such as the World Health Organization and numerous other organizations and or movements. Workers have to understand this. Some workers do, but a lot of them are not in organizations. And it's critically important that workers get organized in order to bring about the defeat of capitalist exploitation.
Thank you, caller. Stay put. We'll be coming back to you as we continue to discuss this theme, wealth, war, and wages. We now will go to caller. Last four numbers are 7236. Caller 7236. Welcome to MPH Radio. What's your comments to this article and the theme, wealth, war, and wages? 7236. Question or comment? 4-1. Going twice. All right, call us 7236. Maybe we'll come back to you later. You have your thing together. You're listening to MPH Radio. We're discussing the theme, wealth, war, and wages. We have a special reporter, Brother Robert Moses, out at the park. And they're doing a demonstration, anti-war demonstration, and they're highlighting the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. We said no war in Ukraine, no to NATO, no weapons, no money for Ukraine anymore. So as we look at these relationships of wealth, war, and wages, they all have a direct relationship to one another. One, we talk about the question how the wealthy can buy votes, buy politicians, influence politicians. It's the politicians that are in the forefront of so-called creating policies. And not only that, when you create policies to do things based upon someone's interest. And when we look at someone's interest, we know the wealthy know that the more they can rake from the labor of the people and the less expenses they have to pay back towards the people, they get a greater profit. So this is where this whole concept of wages come in. Even this whole concept of the fight over these schools, private schools, charter schools versus public schools. See that the wealthy have the interest of maybe even more supporting the private and charter schools. What is that all about? Why is it they want to discredit or get rid of public schools or privatize public schools? On that question, we would like to come back and we ask Brother Alex. Brother Alex, your take in this whole question is about around public school, private schools, and charter schools, and why the wealthy want to turn public schools into private schools. Again, is it directly related to this concept of wealth, war, and wages? Brother Alex, give us your take on this particular struggle.
Well, again, Mr. Lee, we have to realize that education has been with us a long time, thousands of years. But it was the rich that mostly was educated. And they did not seek to educate the poor, because if you educated the poor, you might not find a lot of foot soldiers that wanted to go to war for somebody rich. So the tables had to be flipped. And the most grandiose schools of Europe became the learning centers where the sons and did not go to war. And if they did, they became the commanders. So as a commander, they only went out for glory, for title, for achievement. And if anything went wrong, it was the foot soldiers that did not conquer in battle. So it was always the blame on the other end and not the top end. And if we look at when we came to America, it was the same concept. There were a lot of illiterate people who went to war, and the rich stayed at the top and designated everything and sold all the goods and had everything shipped back and forth and made sure that profits were made from the uniforms, the ammunition, to the sale of the horses and the cavalry and everything. It was just called a war machine. And this war machine led country against country, brother against brother. So for years, battles were fought. But still, education was not being taught, because there were very few schools in America at that time. There were very few schools in Europe at that time. So schooling was not an everyday insight. So as we move forward and more schools were being built, and these one-room schoolhouses that may have taught 8, 9, 10 grades, you had universities in Europe and in America who had started out, and we will call them the Cornells, the Dartmouths, the Harvards, the Yales, the Princetons, which only accepted the best of the best and the wealthiest of the best. And that's where their sons went, their daughters went. And the poor basically had nowhere to go, because the American public college system had not been invented yet. So years later, when public education finally got a footing, it was still considered much less than at Harvard or Yale graduate. And America found a way to continuously supply the war effort, continuously to supply the wealthy, and continue to depress wages for all these things that were being built for and given to the war effort. But yet and still the masses of people were uneducated. So if we move forward now and we realize just to join the services or whatever, it has came above a common GED, and there are many fields in there where you can start with a bachelor's or whatever and move forward, become a commander or whatever. But it's still a rich man's army, and it's still a rich man's war. And the wages of the privates that fight the battles are much lower than the generals that sit back in comfort, miles away from the battlefield. So when we look at our society and say who's at the top and who's at the bottom, that is why that separation has to be enforced. Yes, to keep things in the public arena where you only learn so much. You only have certain opportunities to move forward. But as you move into the charter or the private institutions, you're given more the best of the best and the best opportunities. But most of the time that comes with a word called privilege. And that's privileged here in America, and that's privilege all over the world. So you find that common denominator that, again, feeds the wealthy, looks down at the ones that go to war except for in victory, still pays the lowest wages ever encountered for your life, whether it's on the battlefield or at home. Until we can change the narrative of what a person's life is worth, whether they're rich or poor, we will always be fighting this battle with the rich, because America, when she was founded, and most nations that are founded, they do have class systems. So in that class, you're either with the wealthy, you're either with the middle class, or you're with the poor. And nowhere is that more evident today than the good old USA. So I turn it back, Mike, back over to you, and I'm going to listen to some more comments. And thank you.
Thank you, Alex, for your thoughts. And to call us 6057, let's talk a little bit about wealth and war and that relationship. Many people don't understand that the way wealthy get rich off of walls is first they create them. And by creating them, you can create policies on how you can allocate national budgets, where it can go. For example, for the last 30 years, this country has created a war machine where they're creating walls, and they said they can create walls forever, endless walls. And by creating these walls, they can allocate large amounts of monies to go into different sectors of the military machinery, in which certain individuals will become very wealthy out of this war machine. And they do this at the expense of the poor, because what tax money you take from the poor and put it into general taxes and let these politicians direct where the money go, of course the politicians are going to create policies and direct money to go towards those areas, in this case would be the war machine, to spend money. So this is one of the ways how the rich become a Robin Hood. They steal from the poor. They take from the poor. And they use politicians to do that. Can you talk a little bit more about this whole relationship of how the rich and the squashing walls have a direct relationship with supporting one another? Your perspective, called a 605 summer.
Certainly. As I mentioned earlier, the rich buy political influence. As a matter of fact, it is the rich that control the Democratic and Republican duopoly. And that is why the political leadership that runs for these elected offices have no accountability to the masses of the people. They're only accountable to their financial masters, the rich. And as a consequence of that, the rich exert an inordinate amount of influence over a country's policy out of proportion to their population. And it is on behalf of the rich that wars are waged. And in addition, maintaining a large military absorbs a lot of a lot of youth that would otherwise be unemployed. And you have that factor. And also, it is the greed associated with capitalism, and the need for capitalists to find either new sources or cheaper labor for the finished goods, or markets for their finished goods, that motivates war. And brings misery to the people that are victims of these wars, such as the masses of poor working people in the Southern Hemisphere and Asia. The solution to this is for the workers to organize and educate themselves, because your enemy isn't gonna teach you how to get your freedom. That is something that has to be worked for and struggled for on your own. And as a matter of fact, that is why there's this drive to defund public schools and instead create charter schools. Because by that mechanism, the rich have influence, greater influence over educational policy. In other words, what is taught to the students. They have greater control by financially controlling these institutions, and that is the key reason why the drive for charter schools. It is not so much the intellectual superiority of the students that go to them. It's just that they have greater resources. And those resources are to inculcate the students with the ideas of the rich.
Thank you, caller 6057. What we're going to do, let's go back to caller 7236, see if caller has anything to say on the subject, wealth, war, or wages. Caller, we're coming back to you. 7236. Any question or comment? 7236.
Well, thank you for allowing me to speak. First, I'm standing in solidarity with the people in Lafayette Square today in Washington, D.C., in front of the White House. We need to dismantle NATO as well as stop the war in Russia. My comment is around public education. One of the great things that we have is public education. The problem with charter schools is they take away from the public school budget. In addition to that, there's no standardized curriculum. And as your previous guest had mentioned, they become they become training grounds for the rich, such as having a high school, charter school for hospitality. You need a good primary education you don't need to learn how to be a host or something like that. That could be something done after school or a part of an extended day program. But often, in my experience, the charter school children are not prepared to go on. Many are not prepared to go on to university and do other things because, again, there's not a standardized curriculum. The charter schools, to me, seem to be profit-driven by foundations and other individuals, and they also absorb public assets. There was a Paul Junior High in the District of Columbia is now owned by a charter school. So I have a problem with charter schools. I support public education. I am against the Willow Creek pipeline, as well as I am anti-NATO. And what we see right now is an expansion of weaponry that has never been seen on Earth. And we are expanding it. I understand yesterday the Turkish dictator agreed to let one of the Eastern Europeans in. I think it might have been Finland. I'm not sure. But this is a real, it seems that the Europeans, the British, and the United States have decided to take over or marginalize the Russia. And take its resources. For example, who was responsible, and maybe one of your listeners or your guests know, who was responsible for blowing up the pipeline? And why is it that Saudi Arabia has made more money in 2022 than ever before, as they continue to buy weapons from the United States to wage war against the the people of Yemen? And why are we ignoring the Afghan people, and we continue to ignore the Iraqi people and have sanctions against them, and we are causing deaths where people cannot have access to basic medical supplies and other things because of these sanctions? I just would ask the United States to lift its embargo against Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Iraq, and all of its anti-social policies of embargoes and sanctions this day. This is the 20th anniversary of our continuous war campaign. And what we've done, actually, we used to not pay our soldiers very well, but we pay and we track children to No Child Left Behind through school, and then we try to induct them in the military because they're not prepared to go anywhere else academically. And they're decent, good people. We already know that, or the government knows that, through the No Child Left Behind tracking system that the Bush has put in place. When you listen to the title, you would think that it's encouraging literacy or something like that. No, it's not. It's just a social tracking system that allows us to know who is available potentially to join the military upon their 18th birthday. So we now pay more, and we have platitudes and that we say to people, thank you for your service. Whose service is it when we attack the Iraqi people? We're not serving those young soldiers nor the Iraqi people. There were no weapons of mass destruction. This is, and no one is gaining but the largest corporations that, and they are the Lockheed Martin and all of these type of organizations or corporations that build war machinery. We need to turn this around. The President Biden offered more funding to the military than they even requested. We need to stand up and call the White House. I believe the number is 202-486-1111. I would have to look it up. And Monday through Thursday, everyone can call and share their opinion with our leaders to let them know. Oh, I'm sorry, the number to the White House is 202-456-1111. And you can call Monday through Friday, I think from 9 to 3:30, and share your opinion with the executive branch. And that's something we should all take advantage of, as well as letting our congressional representatives know our concerns, both environmentally and the fact that we want peace, not to continue supporting a war between the Europeans and led by the Ukrainians against Russia. We don't want that. All right. Thank you so much, sir, for allowing me to share my thoughts.
Thank you, Carla, for your comments. Stay on, stay nearby. We may come back to you. What I would like to do, I would like to go to Susie, and others can respond as well. But I just want to ask Susie her general opinion on the influence of the wealthy as it relates to the media. In this article, it talks about how these wealthy billionaires own Microsoft, Amazon, own NBC, SNBC. They own all kind of media network that shape and influence our perception of what is or isn't the truth. Just Susan General, what you think about the wealthy control or the media? And maybe, you know, if you was in control or whatever, would you allow such conditions as this where one person can buy a whole network and can dictate to that network what you see, what you don't see, what you see, what you don't see, et cetera? Just your general response to that, Sister Susie.
The only thing with the media, it's hard to get any kind of media going because of the financial aspect of it. And so therefore, the richest can always have a major role when it comes to the media because they are the only ones that can really go and provide a lot of the equipment and staff and that kind of thing for the media. And most of these are media giants or whatever. They know they have to go along with what the billionaires are the ones with the money because they are the ones that's keeping them going. And when you think about, you say capitalism, the economic and political system is controlled by you know, these billionaires because they are private owners and they for profit. So therefore, they will always have the media working on their side. Thank you.
Okay, I'm bringing my other participants. Point well made. How do we make the media become more accountable to the interests of the people to tell the truth when they own and controlled by the wealthy? That's a dilemma the people have been facing ever since the existence of this country. Your response, Alex, and then we're going to go to call 6057. Your response, Brother Alex.
Well, Mr. Lee, as in all things that, you know, we have to look at, the media is one of the biggest takeaways, I would say, with capitalism. Because with today's media, and I mean social media, it seems that's where we're getting our news from. We're getting incorrect history. Excuse me, I'm so much. But we're failing to see what is in the truth of what's being told today and what's being taught. And that goes back again to our private schools, as well as our public and our charter schools, in what information you receive. And if you're not receiving the best or the truest or the honest information that you need to make positive decisions, say in your life or your child's life, then, you know, we come back to what we're talking about today. And that is where does wealth, war, and wages play a part in our lives? It is such a unique topic to discuss that today. And for us to move forward and realize that this capitalist society, where do we stand? Where do we change things? Where do we go from here? Because will we continue to seek wealth and be as wealthy as others, throw people under the bridge, as we say, excuse me, turn our backs on others, discredit others, as we seek, excuse me again, to glorify war, where we put our young people at risk to go over to be killed, maimed, harmed, and then come back with all these traumatic brain injuries, and where they can't cope on a day-to-day basis within their own families. So we look at the mental illness that war causes from the trauma that these soldiers are exposed to. And then we look at the wages. Yeah.
Brother Alex, I'm going to stop you right there, and I'm just going to add something to your point. Not only do they look at mental illness, but they have a war against the mental illness. You know, recently in the city of Richmond, there was a Hiraka, there was some deputies. He ended up killing a brother who needed some mental help. And it was about 7 to 8 of these deputies just outright killed the brother. And, I mean, you know, these are governmental officials, law officers. I mean, law officers. And if they don't have the respect for the sick, and they don't have the compassion for the sick, what can you say? What can you say?
Well, I think
anyway,
Go ahead. Quick point. When we look at our own society, and the first thing we say is, because it's an unlawful society where we have people that are stealing, robbing, raping, taking, doing whatever they want. Because of that class system, and please forgive me for coughing, but because of that class system, how the rich, the middle class, and the poor, the richer you are, you get away with the crime. You're treated differently. People see you differently. As in middle class, you begin to be able to have some advantages, but not many. People put up their homes, they put up their money, their wealth, to try and make sure that a family member may can get off on a technicality that the rich always seem to get off on. But sometimes it doesn't happen. But they serve shorter sentences. Now you look at the poor who feed the system, who give our judges, lawyers, comfortable salaries to live the rest of their lives on. It is wrong for any Supreme Court justice to serve for life. It would be wrong for any man to serve for life. It's just totally ridiculous. But we do so because that is how this country was founded, on an unforgiving law to keep the poor oppressed. And when you keep the poor feeding the system by the money raised through capitalism and these low wages, that's why every statement you hear from a politician is, first, I'm doing all I can to help the middle class. Whenever I hear a politician say that statement, I'm doing all I can to help the middle class, then I know where his aim truly is. He's wholeheartedly behind the American capitalist society. And he doesn't really care about what school your child goes to. He doesn't care about the cost of prescription drugs. He don't care about your son and daughter being beat up by the cops. We have a class society here. and we need to change it. And I turn it back to you.
Having this question of the wealthy, this question of the wealthy and the media called a 6057. How do you overcome or make the media accountable if it's owned and controlled by the wealth? Your response, caller, 6057.
You can't. Let's see. And, you know, because of the way everything is structured, the only way, you know, people can stay informed is by having alternate sources of information. If you rely on the capitalist media, it spreads confusion, inculcates fear. And I wanted to add that factor to how, you know, how the rich buy influence. By inculcating fear among the people and, you know, the masses of the people. And, you know, this is done by, and this is how the U.S. justifies these endless wars, by inculcating fear in the people. And when you inculcate fear, people tend to let their guard down. They demand higher security, tighter security, you know, at the expense of, you know, certain human rights that every man and woman has access to or should have access to if they were not strapped by fear. And, you know, fear is another weapon that's used by the rich in order to, you know, to maintain their domination in these capitalist societies. And, you know, the thing is, though, they use this in order to, they buy influence. That's how they control the educational system. And they influence it and in ways that, you know, that what students are taught is how to think like a rich person would. And so our problem is above all an organizational and ideological problem. In other words, we're in a struggle to change the way people think. And that is a very important struggle to wage because that affects the actions that they will take. And, you know, and that's why you have so many working masses doing things that are against their interests, like voting for the Democratic and Republican duopoly every election cycle, even though all signs point to the fact that the Democratic and Republican parties are one of the biggest enemies facing humanity.
Finish your thoughts, caller 6057.
Yeah. Until we're organized, we cannot put an end to this. We got to get better organized and politically educate ourselves and rely on information from a diverse range of sources, not just any one source, especially the capitalist media.
Okay, and our final point on the subject for today's program, as we talk about the relationship between wealth, war, and wages, let's just end with the discussion on wages. Now, I'm trying to figure out, what's the difficulty of creating a policy where you have livable wages, where people can live in decency. Given the fact that the U.S. has the capacity to print money based on any need and interest they want, that it won't. It can just print money, and that's what it does. It does for everything else. It can even get foreign countries, i.e., the Zionist state of Israel, billions of dollars as a gift, and they don't have to repay the money back. It go around, pay private armies to do illegal work for their interests. Anytime when they want to create money, they can do this. So participants, what's up with this whole equation of people inside of this capitalist country can't have affordable living wage? Just your general response for today's program. I start off with caller 7236. Your response, caller 7236.
I think capitalism and greed is prevents livable wages. The wages are raised, and at the same time, the petty bourgeoisie raises the cost of housing, of food, of transportation, and other things. So we're constantly at battle. And the capitalist economy is based on a surplus labor pool. So it's intentional, as the speakers have said, the intentional poverty is created. It is horrible. And housing, and what's happening in this country is the institutionalization of housing, of food, of all things. I had the experience, quite frankly, of volunteering at a food bank, and the people at the food bank are recording the information of who visits the food bank, and they're only allowed to visit twice a month. This has been really hard on the public since March, when the SNAP benefits were cut. But I think imperialism is based on, U.S. imperialism is based on a surplus labor economy, and workers are underpaid. You look at Jeff Bezos, who you mentioned earlier. He has been fighting the union, the development of unions, and that Mr. Small, he was a regular worker in Brooklyn who rose up and organized the union. But they're still struggling, and Bezos was to the folks down in Bismarck, down south, was that he used the money that they earned to fight their organizing a union. So we see this happening, whether it's in Starbucks or with Amazon, and it's up to us, the people, to make our concerns known to Bezos, known to the owners of Starbucks, that we're not just sheep and that we are workers, and we demand that our fellow workers be paid reasonable, livable wages, health care, opportunities for education. And this comes from, as your speaker said, organizing. And the workers realizing their position and that they are not a part of the 1%, nor will they ever be, and that they deserve decent wages.
Thank you, Carla, for your response. Call 6057. What was this question, livable wages? Why the workers in this country can't get that? Given the fact that we know they're not the solution to the workers' problem, in essence, you understand it's the system that needs to be eradicated and changed. But just the whole idea that we can see they can have money to for regime change, against countries all around the world. They can just get grant to their allied countries. They can just create money whenever they get ready. But when the workers, even with their own military soldiers, when they come back, they don't have enough resources to take out a family. What's up with this? Why the workers can't get this basic demand and living and working in a way where they can live in decency? 6057.
Certainly. Because the rich control the political leadership and the decision makers that make decisions on wages, and also we're living in an era of wage slavery in a sense, and the ruling class keeps people trapped in this situation by not providing enough for an individual to live off of, and a minimum wage or a livable wage would be would enable an individual to provide for food, clothing, and shelter. However, the wages that most workers get do not provide for those, do not provide enough for those things. Workers are subject to taxation, and also because of the exploitative nature of this society, workers are actually provided to do a great deal for the little money they get. For the low wages they get, they have to provide for food, clothing, shelter, and health care. That is an individual responsibility, even with health insurance, which is something that has to be paid for. So, the problem is that the leadership is controlled by the rich, not by the workers. And it is in the interest of capitalism to keep workers dependent on these low wages, and that is how they get away with the policies that they pursue, which are against the interests of the workers. And that is why it is important that the workers get organized. That's why Bezos, Gates, and other billionaires fight against unionization, because it increases the workers' level of organization, and it improves and that is the only way they get any power, is through permanent organization. And that is why there is a big effort to suppress labor organizing.
Thank you, Carl. At this point in time, you're listening to MPH Radio, discussing wealth, war, and wages. We are being live with Brother Robert Moses as he spoke to several participants of today's program up in Washington, D.C. He's an anti-war demonstration. It's celebrating commemorating the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. What we're going to do when we come back from our break, we will have announcements for MPH Radio. We will have an aspect of our culture where we have some poetry reading by our dear sister, Minister Murray, followed by a message to the community from Alex. This is MPH Radio. We'll be right back. Don't you go nowhere.
sitting in the morning sun. I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in. Then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change, everything still remains the same. Tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. It's 2,000 miles I roam, just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting
no day or night? Which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose?
That's right. If you had a choice of color, which one would you choose? That's the million-dollar question. Welcome back to MPH Radio. This radio program is under the banner of the Missing Pages of History, Inc. It's a bi-weekly program that comes on every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, U.S. We ask you to spread the word and join us every other Saturday as we begin to fill in our missing pages of history. Tonight we have discussed the concept and the topic of wealth, war, and wages. Right now we'd like to make a couple quick announcements. Then we're going to follow by a poetry reading from our sister, Minister Murray, and with the final thoughts from our brother Alex as you speak to the community. We'd like to remind everyone coming up in April, MPH Radio will be doing its live regional and seasonal program on Comcast and Verizon in the Richmond Metropolitan Virginia Metro area. In April, stay tuned for more information. Also, we are open to membership to help come and join our supporting fan club for MPH Radio. If you have interest, you can do that by emailing us at mphradio@yahoo.com. As well as for those who are asking how can they contribute to help build this program and organization, we have some methods now in which how you can support us. You can make a contribution donation to by sending it to MPH Radio in care of Missing Pages of History, Inc., P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia 23261, or you can Zelle us by sending to Missing Pages of History 1@yahoo.com. All small caps all together. Missing Pages of History 1@yahoo.com. We would thank you for your support. And like always, we can't grow no bigger, no faster than the support of the community. We are the community, and the community are us. So come and help build this institution. So at this point in time, we know how important culture is. So we can bring you a culture presentation to poetry reading with our dear sister, Minister Murray. We'll bring her in, and Sister Murray has a culture presentation where she would like to read a poem to our listening worldwide audience. Sister Murray, welcome to MPH Radio.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. I want to just take this time to also to thank you. Thank you for using your platform today, hopefully to be a blessing to people, and especially for women. This is Women's International Month. Also, thank you to the co-host, Mr. Alex, my brother, and the sister Susie. The topic, wealth, war, and wages, has been very interesting, and I've learned a lot, and I thank you for that. The poem that I will be reading today is Still I Rise by Maya Angelou. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? Because I walk like I've got oil wells pumping in my living room. Just like moons and like suns with the certainty of tides. Just like hopes springing high, still, I'll rise. Did you want to see me broken, bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries? Does my haughtiness offend you? Don't you take it awful hard, because I laugh
like I've got gold mines digging in my own backyard. You may shoot me with your words. You may cut me with your eyes. You may kill me with your haughtiness. But still, like air, I'll rise. Does my sexiness upset you? Does it come as a surprise that I dance like I've got diamonds at the meeting of my thighs? Out of the hut of history's shame, I rise. Up from a path that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean, leaping and wide, whirling and swelling, I bear in the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear, I rise. Into a daybreak that's wondrously clear, I rise. Bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of the slave. I rise. I rise. I rise. Thank you, Maya Angelou, and thank you, Mr. Lee. I turn the mic over to you.
And we thank you, Sister Maya, for your contribution to this program. Always, we'd like to thank you. And at this point in time, we will turn the mic over to Brother Alex as he sends and shares his message to the community. Brother Alex.
Yes, again, Mr. Lee, the wonderful program. I appreciate all the guests who have spoken today, and especially that inspiring poem from my sister. We can never hear enough of Mary Angela. Now, I would like to offer my condolences to the Latino family because they lost a son today. Well, not today, excuse me, but they lost a son. And it, among other things, touched me last week. And, you know, I said a few weeks ago that I was tired of, you know, writing stuff about black men dying in this country. But today, I want to think about something maybe a little bit more positive and give to the women also this month for Women's Heritage History Month. And I like to say, I called it Letters from Heaven. Touched it, sweet, by the smiles, happiness, and the hugging as a mom embraced her son, Sydney Holmes, who was released from custody after serving 34 years for a crime he did not commit, as the police and the justice system railroaded him into a conviction. He stood fast to his innocence. It was a wrongful case and conviction, as he was originally was given 825 years for being the getaway driver for an armed robbery of a Florida citizen. Neither the car he was sitting in nor its color matched the description from the victims. Neither could the victims identify him as a participant in the crime. He had six alibi witnesses who were all credible but were never called to exonerate him. Even one of the victims questioned his arrest. He was formally sentenced in April 1989 to 400 years with no physical or scientific, nor any corroborating witness linking him to the crime. The Innocent Project of Florida worked for years after reviewing his case. As he sat in jail from the age of 23 to 57, the visits, calls, gifts, and letters did not stop from his mother. Mr. Holmes said, "I never lost hope and knew the day would come. I cannot wait to hug my mother in the free world for the first time in over 34 years. The police did not investigate others, and the real criminal have never been found." Holmes' case shows us police investigations and trial convictions at their worst. During the same week, Sullivan Walter, now 53, was exonerated after serving 37 years of confinement of a rape crime he did not commit. The Innocent Projects of New Orleans were diligent to get him released. He was 17, but was tried as an adult. It was the longest known wrongful incarceration in the state of Louisiana and the fifth longest in U.S. history of a youthful offender. His trial lasted one day, just a few hours long, as he was railroaded by a witness's false testimony that he was the perpetrator. Blood and semen evidence that would exonerate him was never introduced in the trial. Neither the local police nor the court saw a proper investigation, as the real assaulter was still loose in the community. The police and justice system believed that they could do as they chose to a black teenager from a poor family and that they would never be scrutinized or held accountable for their actions. Mr. Walter's family, especially his mother, communicated with his son until he was released. Nor did he nor his mother give up hope of exoneration. Letters from heaven. I have never taken it for granted that my mother taught me to read. As most mothers have taught their children the ABCs, I am sure I mixed up the letters often when I learned to write them. As I got older, my mother read to me from the Bible, and she taught me to write good words about everything. I cherish those memories now as I write the stories and articles I share with the world with love and happiness. Never would I have realized that learning the basics of letter writings begins with your mother. Just to write, "Mom, I love you," brought such a smile from her that was golden and pure joy. Mothers have a deep faith that the child they are born and raised would not lie or hurt them. They have a bond that most men could not understand. Mothers who spend long days and nights with a sick child but worry the same over a well child that never seems to need care. A mother's love is like no other, you see. You see more in her child than any other. I remember a judge once saying, "A man will lie to God, but will be shamed to tell the truth to his mother." This is the power of a real mother over man if he truly loves his mother. I recall the fictional scene, the movie Life, where Eddie Murphy's character, Ray Gibson, is conceiving his idea of a jazz club in Harlem called the Boom Boom Room. And he gives the other men in the prison camp hope because Ray's intentions were that this was not a club to take your mother to. Being incarcerated for life doesn't mean that a man should stop dreaming of a better life once they're released. Ray remarked that if it exists in my mind, that there's where it starts. It starts in the brain first, you know. It's got to exist up here first. As a man thinketh, so then shall he get. You know, something like that. You read the Bible. This simple thought gives us an opportunity to think first before we do. It is something a good mother would teach. Think first before you act. Bad actions have severe consequences, may end your life or change it drastically. The most powerful scene to me was Ray was handed a letter to read from one of his fellow inmates because at over 60, he could not read and none of the other inmates had been taught either. It was a letter from his mother's neighbor telling him about all the tragedies and deaths that occurred while he was incarcerated. It was a moving scene. Because he learned also his father and mother was deceased. The other prisoners didn't want to hear any bad news from home and accepted their fate to die in prison. Ray and Claude, his friend who was wrongfully sentenced with him, never stopped trying to get out of prison and finally found a way out many years later. Men and women wrongfully and rightfully convicted needed a window out to the world. They still have family. They have parents who suffer in shame and in debt to a legal system that drains their finances and their faith. They have children who are too young to understand why they were taken away or why they can't touch them as they are separated by glass or bars when they visit. they have spouses or girlfriends who may wait their sentences out with them or move on to relationships. These so-called friends are hard to be found as few want to be associated with a prior felon. Out of the desperate days and nights of trying to get someone new to hear an old case, one often loses hope. Some prisoners curse God and the world and become vengeful and feel no remorse. Others who know they did not do the crime bide their time in the trust of others as their mothers speak out. It is usually the mother who says it was not my child. Her remarks fall on deaf ears as if she is a minority with few resources and little money. But these mothers' cries are now being heard by the innocent committees of trial lawyers who have agreed to reopen cases that appear to be unfair. Had it not been for these mothers crying out for justice for hundreds of years, thousands of black men and women would be incarcerated for life or put to death because no one sought the real criminals in their cases. So today, I applaud all mothers who stand for their children, whom society has thrown away the keys and said they are not redeemable or worthy to join the rest of the community again and be welcomed back into the family of man. Oh, how I couldn't wait to open up mom's letters as she told me what was going on in my hometown while I was away in another city at school or working. I have saved as many letters as I could to help me deal with the grief of losing her so many years ago. I read them now on my worst days. Mom would tell me about the weather and the deaths in the family. I found out who got married and who finished school. I found out about a new birth or who got locked up in prison. Then her letters got serious about having faith in God and how to treat others. She encouraged me to treat everyone with love, honor, and respect. She told me to choose my friends carefully, to make as few enemies as possible, and to help out and assist others in any way I could. Mom told me to respect my siblings and my elders at all times. She wrote so many good things that it would take all day to cover. Most importantly, she said to stay in contact with family and friends no matter what. If ever in a bind, you don't know who will do something for you. My mother always signed her letters to me. Love forever, mother. And don't forget to pray. Prayer makes your day, was her motto. Yes, beautiful letters from heaven. I've seen so many letters written by prisoners who would never leave the confines of walls that hold them from the outside world. I have read letters of despair as well as letters of hope and reform. I have read letters to wives to ask for forgiveness and letters requesting a divorce so they can continue a life without them. I have read letters to children wishing to share birthdays and holidays or just plain days of fun. Then I have read letters of regret that their children they fathered and abandoned them so that the name of the father and his crime does not affect them in life. I also read the heartbreaking letters of innocent men and women who deny their convictions and have proof, but no one seems to care or listen as time passes and years behind bars become a reality. Almost every letter was signed from your loving son, your loving daughter, your loving child, or from mama, who will never stop believing or loving you. We all need love, faith, and hope. If we lose any of these, we may lose all three. Then the system wins, and our souls are lost. This is Women's History Month, and I give praise and respect for all mothers who fight for their child's innocence or support them when they have accepted the wrong that their child caused. Some mothers have even bonded with the families of the victims. It is a terrible history of black slave mothers who stood shoulder to shoulder to see their fathers, their own mothers and brothers and sons and daughters hung in trees or beaten to death and could not do anything
but weep. I will continue to write as I question, why do we suffer so? I don't expect an answer, just more letters from prison that saddens me. But comforting letters from mothers will always bring sunshine to the worst of any day. Just like the letters Mom wrote me, I will cherish and treasure them until she hugs me again in the next life. I love you, Mom. You are my best reason to celebrate Women's History Month. And I thank you, family.
Thank you, Brother Alex, for your message to the community and to our listening audience. We'd like to just make your way again. We'll be back on April the 1st, 1 p.m. Please spread the word. Also, we'd like to just like to thank everyone who participated on today's program, Wealth, War, and Wages. And someone earlier sent me this message in which I would like to share with you that I think is a very beautiful thought. And I will end the program with this. It says, challenges make you more responsible. Always remember that life without struggle is a life without success. Don't give up and learn not to quit. Think about that. Until next time, come and join us and help us to continue towards filling in our missing pages of history. Remember, MPH is here for all of us. We see you on the 1st of April.
Education, 'cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it